Hi, everybody. Am I alone?
No.
No.
No response at all. I'm like, ooh. Let's see whose chair is Mac here.
Absolutely.
Very good. And Andy. How about Mindy?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Carolyn.
Yes.
Jennifer.
Yes.
Deb.
Yes.
Ron.
I'm here.
Phyllis.
Yes.
Jerry.
Yes, I'm here.
David.
Yes.
Sandra.
Here.
Welcome, Sandra. Oliver said he would not be here tonight. He's got something going on with his family. So we'll skip him for now. Welcome to session two, I should say, of our art and science of using DISC in coaching. You guys all got my emails, I assume, now?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Good. It was a little work for some of these to get them through. It seemed like, wow. So let's start real quickly. Does anybody have any burning questions after Tuesday night's session they want to ask?
Dave, this is Ron here. Can I ask one or two?
Absolutely.
Okay, my question really revolves around negative and positive results coming out of the most and the least.
Okay.
So my question really revolves around, is there any really notable, significant issues that arise out of having negative scores, or is this purely just as a matter of arriving at a dominant factor?
Yeah, it's really identifying the dominant factor. And generally generally speaking, that the things that you say are least like you are, say, the things you learned early in life, and they're deeply ingrained. That this is not right, or this is not who I want to be. That's what also changes, at least over time.
Right, okay. I was just interested in whether there was sort of some underlying significance, which leads me to the next one. In your first week of slides, I'm just having a look here on the calculating the scores bit. I forget which slide it actually is. It's almost towards the end. There is another bunch of digits under the column mark N.
Uh-huh.
Is that of any relevance?
Yes. How's that for an answer?
Well, it's a real high D answer, Dave. Thank you.
Real high D. Yes. So, and actually, we're going to discuss those in some details as we go through here. Those relate back to your, what's called your classical pattern. We'll discuss what those mean, how you derive those things during session six. So it's a good question. We're going to push off on the detailed answer until session six.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. That's me done.
Okay. Anybody else with a burning question? Okay. Well,
excuse me.
Yes.
No, I sneezed. Excuse me.
Oh. All good time. Okay. So
I tried not to.
Let's review session one. A little briefly, you have your notes in front of you. We talked about the history of DISC. Who can recite it for me quickly, the history of DISC? Were you not listening? Oh, my. Who's the theory based off of?
Dr. William Marston.
Dr. William Marston. You don't recall what his book was called?
The Emotions of Normal People.
There we go. Wonderful. And did he invent the DISC profile itself?
No.
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 Good. And who did?
Minnesota University.
Minnesota.
Yeah, University of Minnesota, some PhDs over there. All right. So we talk a lot in class about what DISC does measure, but what DISC does not measure is equally important, both in terms of how you interpret it, but also as people take the profile and people sit there and say, a recipient put into a box, understanding what DISC does and does not measure helps you tell them, communicate to them that it may be a box, but it's really only a very small portion of their behavior you're trying to identify, not trying to identify the whole and put all of them into a box. So he said, doesn't it measure intelligence, desire, values, strength of character, emotional intelligence, political beliefs, sense of humor, so forth and so on. I want you to really think, though, about the fact that DISC does not measure everything. You can get really attached to DISC. A lot of people do, and it's a great tool. But keep in mind, it's a small portion of a person's behavioral patterns. We discussed the three graphs, the mask, which came from what kind of answers? The most like you. Good. We discussed the core, which came from?
Least.
The least responses, yep. And the mirror, which is came from where?
The difference.
The difference between the two.
Most minus the least. Very good. We also discussed a little bit about the Johari window, the arena, the mask, the blind spots, and the potential, and how this is actually a great tool for coaching in general, actually, but also very good for us here because we can use DISC to help open up the arena to areas where we're comfortable and the client's comfortable. We can get some good, honest discussion, some honest answers and feedback from our client, help them move forward more quickly. A behavioral style chart you see on here, we actually discussed, if you will, in the early discussions about how DISC, the DISC come from, but we're going to actually show it to you here tonight. You see it in your next slide there. You might want to pull this out of your little package and keep it handy with you throughout the session, because you're going to find yourself referring back to it. And it shows a basic four-quadrant model. Take the vertical and horizontal arrows where they cross, creates the four quadrants. Talk about the active behavioral style versus more thoughtful or reserved. Right-hand side, people-oriented, accepting. Left-hand side, task-oriented or questioning. Now, if you look at those, look at all six of the lines there that crisscross that page, you'll notice that those lines have arrows on the end of them. Now, those arrows are there to indicate intensity. Because you can be an active behavioral style, but not that active. More than your thoughtful reserve, but not that active. Someone else could be much higher. So, for example, you may sit there and say, I took my profile, I'm a high D. And I might snort back at you, ha, I'm a higher D than you are, because that intensity shows there and shows how much of each particular style we have in us. So the arrows are there to show intensity. Now you'll notice also that there are two arrows that go diagonally from the D to the S and the I to the C. And it's labeled there very clearly opposites. Because while the I is an active behavioral style and people-oriented, the C is exactly the opposite, very thoughtful and very task-oriented. Likewise, the D, active and task-oriented, and the S is thoughtful and people-oriented. So does that mean that the I's and the C's tend to fight and the D's and S's tend to fight because they're opposites? What do you think?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I think they can.
That's a high yes answer for you. Any thoughts?
This is Sandy. Sandra Hewer.
Yeah.
I think that they can complement each other because they're on opposite sides of this story. One, for example, is very task-oriented. The other, and I'm a high I, isn't. And I need someone like that in my team who is very task-oriented. But we could clash as well because of the detail-oriented I find frustrating as well. As an I, as an example. But you need to understand the styles in order to complement one another.
Yeah. So, yeah. The difference in the behavioral style between the active and thoughtful personalities, whether it be task or people-oriented, can really help complement each other. So a high I, as Sandy said here, might say, you know, I have all these great ideas. I'm a different person. I have all these things that go around my head. But you know what? Not much gets done.
So lack of focus.
I might hire a high C to work with me, take all my ideas, and turn them into reality.
Mm.
Yeah. Likewise, the D, a tendency to want to get things done, and get things done in a hurry. They're natural leaders. We'll talk about them quite a bit here tonight. Whereas the S is kind of a natural follower. And they're looking for a leader. And quite frankly, their people orientation will help soften the D. So if a D and S are married, the D might, you know, keep track of, keep track of what's going on around the house, you know, make decisions, get things done. The S might do things like remember birthdays, remember to say thank you, take care of the kids, whether they be a male or a female, have a much more people orientation. So those two opposites can actually complement each other. So it's important to understand that none of these profile styles are good or bad. We're going to go through them in detail over the next couple of sessions here. We're going to point out both the good things and the not-so-good things about each of the styles. All right. So let's go and look at that upper left-hand quadrant, the high D. Okay? And let's talk about some things about the high D. Now, at their very best, high Ds tend to be confident and self-assured. They're natural leaders, and they want to charge the hill. They're going to be adventurous. They get bored with routines, and they like to shake things up. And they don't even view to shake things up. It's just a little change. We're going to go to Hawaii instead of Alaska. What's the big deal? We're going to go on vacation. So change is part of natural makeup. And they'll change things at the drop of a hat if they think they see a better way or even possibly just a better way. They tend to be inquisitive. And they believe they know the answer even before you ask the question. Let me tell you a little story here. So Sam is a fast-rising executive at a large multinational company. He has a reputation as someone who gets things done and gets results. He's always looking for a better way to do things, and he often finds them. Sam surrounds himself with people who are talented, like himself, and take charge. He delegates things to these people because he knows and trusts that they'll get things done just as he would. So what's Sam's challenge? The support from the executive team above him is somewhat thin, because while his results have been outstanding, he's not done a good job of building relationships with his immediate superiors and even his peers. No one believes they truly know Sam, and therefore the executives aren't willing to put their reputations on the line to promote him. Does that sound familiar to you guys?
Yeah.
Nod your heads. Okay. Do you guys know someone like that?
Several. I work in business. Yeah, I know several.
Yeah. They get to, I mean, Heidi's very quickly get to be mid-level executives easily because they get things done, and especially early on in business, you get rewarded for results. Now, a really brilliant ID can get even farther than just, you know, mid-management, because they'll continue to get results. And these sometimes end up as the guys who are at the top of an organization, or women, who are brilliant and disliked. Now, if the high D is a little smarter than that and goes, huh, I'm getting some good stuff done here, but you know what? I'm not really a genius. I should hire some geniuses to work for me and delegate to them, as Sam has talked about doing here. That will help Sam's star rise higher. But Sam will still look at it and say, look at all the things my team is getting done, and not think about the bigger team. He'll think about the team he's leading, his team of direct reports, versus the team he's on, the team of people around him, his fellow executives or managers. So you have to think about that, and Sam has to learn that people are important. He needs to nourish them to be effective. Now, let's discuss the high D here at their worst. At their worst, the high D may be perceived as being aloof and even arrogant. They make demands on their subordinates or their spouses, don't recognize good performance, they find faults, and they seldom give praise. They're big proponents of change, so they change things whenever they want to without asking anyone else's permission. They appear to be cold and insensitive. They communicate in short, loud bursts and seldom take time to explain decisions or to get buy-in. Doesn't that sound delightful? So let me tell you a little story here. Here's Susie, a VP at a mid-sized company. She's in charge of operations and views that as her personal kingdom. She came in from the outside with a resume that demonstrates a lot of achievements, one after another. And her old company refused to promote her. She's a problem solver, moves from one problem to the next, comes in like a tornado, eliminates underperformers, eliminates deadwood, improves the bottom line, and then moves on to the next assignment. The team below her lacks talent. Her success almost all comes from her own strong will and determination. Her challenge, she appears to be wearing out her welcome in operations as a member of the key employees have left the organization. No place else for her to go in the organization, and she believes she's being underutilized. So, you recognize those traits? Somebody you might know? Now, that's the boss we all love to hate, isn't it? It's just someone who makes everyone around them uncomfortable, and they're constantly in your face, and there's no room for mistakes, and you just generally feel lousy. So imagine that you had a high D as a client. And think about, for just a moment here, some of the things you might do or might encounter as you coach them. But before we get into that aspect too deeply, let's look at a third possibility here for a coach. Let me say for a high D. Suppose the high D is the coach. Okay. So what are some tendencies of a natural high D as a coach? You can see them there. They can be direct and off-putting. They may miss the emotional undertones. They may try and force someone to shift before that person is ready. Because why? Because I know what's right for them, and I'm going to help them. They may focus so much on the task and actions that they don't focus on what's underneath the tasks, the emotional aspects, the emotional underbelly here of any client's challenges. They may be dying to give advice because they know, I can solve this problem in 3 minutes. Just watch this. Do these 5 things. You'll be done. It'll be all solved. Next, I'm ready. And they may not check in as an accountability partner because they expect people to get things done, and the idea they wouldn't is something that's hard for them to fathom. Now, these are possibilities because the high D have these tendencies, but as we grow and mature, become more self-aware, we tend to take these kind of tendencies we have and we modify them. So is anybody here taking an emotional intelligence class yet? Okay. I know Dr. Laura Belston teaches one for CTA, and by the way, she is simply brilliant. DISC is a great start down the path of emotional intelligence, and it plays in right here. Because while these tendencies of a D as a coach might come out that way, if you're emotionally aware, emotionally intelligent, you can balance these things out. Are there any high D coaches on the call? No one's going to admit to it.
I am.
Who said I am?
Phyllis.
Phyllis. So Phyllis, this thing describe you, you think?
Yes.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
So becoming aware of these tendencies, you can begin to adjust your behaviors appropriately. Okay? So now I want you to feel bad about this because I would tell you from personal experience, high Ds make great coaches. If they're aware of their tendencies and can balance them out. What would make a high D a great coach? Anybody?
Being aware of their impact.
Being aware of their impact? Excellent, yes.
So I say that.
I think being aware of their blind spots, Dave.
Being aware of their blind spots? I'm sorry, you weren't quite done over there. You had something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, so this is Sandy. I'm a high I, and I had a high D as a coach this past year. And
uh-huh.
I'm a coach. And she actually adjusted her behavior by actually asking for feedback on the impact she was having. So that really, really – and she was adjusting knowing the type of personality I had. Her desire to tell, she – coached around instead of giving me answers, knowing that that was something I needed. But that was through really asking for the feedback.
Very good.
And it was
what else
really
make a high D a great coach?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
What else? What characteristic might make a high D a great coach?
The level of confidence.
Level of confidence? Good. I like that one. How about
focused on,
go ahead.
They're focused on results.
Bingo. You know what? All those wee ways, well, I didn't quite get it done because, the Heidi's not going to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you guys all know who Thomas Leonard was? So Thomas Leonard was a guy who's credited as the father of modern-day coaching. He passed away 10 years ago, maybe, at the age of 48, something like that. But he's the guy who put together, he built Coachville, he built the ICF, he built Coach U, he built all those things. And a friend of mine was actually being coached by Thomas. And so one day she called Thomas, and Thomas said, "Oh, it's good to talk to you. You're supposed to do these three things before our call. Did you get them all done?" She goes, "Well, not quite." And he says, "Well, then get them done and call me back." They hung up on her. She was a little annoyed. She picked up the phone. She called him back. He says, "You got the things done already?" She goes, "Well, no, but I just had," and then he hung up on her again. She did the things she was supposed to do. Called him back, says, he says, "You have those things done?" She said, "Yes." All right, let's move. Let's go forward. So, you know, you hear about coaching being all this touchy-feely stuff. Thomas was definitely a high-D kind of coach. He did not accept people who weren't going to work for what that was going on and what they need to get done. So a coach can be as good as a high-D because they can bring accountability to people who otherwise wouldn't have it. Right. So you have your slide. You talk about the high D as a client. Natural strengths. To coach a high D, they're going to have an action orientation. And that's a good thing. If people take an action, it's better if people take no action, staying where they are. If they're a high D as a client and they make mistakes, they're not going to sit there and fret about them. They're going to go, "I tried that, didn't work, huh. What else can we try?" And they're going to want to try the next thing. They're going to get worried or embarrassed or upset about a mistake. Now, they have blind spots. How others perceive them. High Ds don't look in the mirror and say, "Man, what a rotten person I am." Or, "Man, I'm way too demanding." Or, "Man, people don't like me." They look in the mirror and they go like, "I'm a good guy," or "I'm a good girl. I mean well. I'm honest with people. I tell them what's really going on." So it's a big blind spot. The emotions of others, they'll hear the words, they'll process the words, but they won't know what it means sometimes underneath. So as a coach, a big part of your job is help them get past that, help them see the things that they're not seeing. This is where a profile can be very handy for you because it points these things out in ways that are not overly intrusive and allows you to have a discussion about them based on the profile versus based on your own observations, which they might find a little judgmental. What else about the high D as a client? Well, when you're talking with them, their tendency in acting with others is that they're going to be making demands on others rather than making requests. So what that means is you're coaching them. They say, "I'll go back and work with Bob on this issue tomorrow." You might want to say, "Okay, good. Let's rehearse what we're going to say to Bob. What do you think you're going to say? Tell Bob to get his act in gear." All right, so that's good. What else could we approach here that might be a little less direct to help Bob get back to what he should be? And you can rehearse them with them the right things to say and which things to watch for. High Ds don't like being told what to do. So when they're at lower levels especially, they'll grate against their bosses because they think they're smarter than their bosses are. You can coach them around that, how to get past the issue of your boss doesn't do because he's the boss or she's the boss. Interact with that. Now, high Ds don't think they need coaching. This has got a good side and a bad side to it. If you're out marketing, running into some high Ds, they can be kind of hard to sell sometimes on the idea of coaching, because they may view it as too touchy-feely. Or say, the problem's really in our mind, they're really somebody else's. Now, the good news is, when you get a high D who begins to realize some of the challenges they have, they have that mirror held up for them in the Johari window that says, here's some blind spots for you to look at. If they accept that, they will become ravenous fans of coaching and really want to help you, or really want to work with you. High Ds tend to act before they think. We have to get them to slow down. I like to use a term, we're going to slow down here so we can go faster. And a high D will buy into that. Oh, okay, so if I slow down and pace this, I'll get faster results at the end. Yes, slow down to go fast. They may view coaching as soft. Okay? But I say, once a high D buys into coaching, you're good to go with them. Questions so far about the high D?
So, Dave, Phyllis?
Yes.
So if you're a high D as a coach and you have a client that's a high D, is there any can it be problematic?
It can be, but it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
A high D as a client a lot of times relate very well to a high D as a coach. But I really want the high D as a coach to be very self-aware for themselves and their client. So as they discuss the problems and solutions, you can help the client see where the high D needs to be modified with emotional intelligence, if you will, to get the right behaviors in the end. Because high Ds tend to be direct and short with words, for example. They have less tolerance for like a high I, who tends to use a lot more words. That will annoy a high D sometimes. And so the high D is the coach, high D is the client. They'll relate on the issue of we get to it quickly, we get to the point. The high D coach has got to say, let's go beyond the issue of the actions and what are the emotions here. Let's get into the emotions of not only yourself, but also of your of the person you're dealing with that's causing you the problem you're having so we can really solve it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Good. Other
Dave, it's Ron here. Can I just have a question on that, if I may?
Absolutely.
In your guide handbook, you make a statement that high Ds, when they're working together, make a quick judgment about each other. If they like each other, it can be a real dynamite relationship. But if they don't like each other, they make that decision very quickly and part company. So wouldn't the coaching relationship in that regard that you're describing then very much depend on initial, if you like, likability factor and acceptability factor?
Yeah. Very much true. High Ds judge each other quickly, and they decide, it's sort of like dogs, whether it's an alpha dog and a beta dog, and dogs have a lineage, if you will, or they stay in line that way. Ds are the same way. if I get to have another D, we start talking, and I decide, I like this guy. He's really sharp. I can follow him, and he feels the same way. We're going to get along. We're talking, and I see that I'm the one who's, quote, smarter, and the other person sees that as well and acknowledges that through words and actions. We may get along well also. But if there is a clash of egos, which is fairly easy with a high D, then yes, there'll be immediate battle between the two, and they won't become clients and coach at all. You can have the best recommendations in the whole world. You got to go talk to Sam. He's the best coach ever. And you go like, wow, this is really great. You talk to Sam, and you're a high D, and so is Sam. You go like, yeah, I don't like this guy. So high Ds judge quickly, especially of each other. Other questions? All right. Questions to ask a high D? One they always like, what are you going to do? Ah, good, because they want to take action. How will this impact the others around you? That's the one that's going to give them pause. Huh. Don't I care about that? Yeah, let's talk about why you care and how it's going to impact others. Are there other alternatives? High Ds tend to be creative this way. They have lots of ideas. You can sit there and say, you got three or four good ones there. Which one makes the most sense? And walk them through that process of not going just one answer, but three or four. Get a question they like. What do you need as a result? What's the result? What's the bottom line here? They like the bottom line. And they want to get there. So that's one they're going to relate to. They're going to want to hear. They're going to take action on. When can you do this? Again, very action-oriented. They want to give you a date. They want to commit to it. That's the way high Ds do things. So you don't worry about pushing a high D too hard into action. Ask the questions. They'll move into action on their own. But keep in mind to ask questions about the emotions and the impact on others, and the impact long-term. If you do those kind of things, you'll make the high D client more effective in what they're doing. Questions?
Can you repeat that last part you said, Dave?
Well, I said if you help them with that, you'll make the client much more effective in their life. You ask them questions beyond the task, but get into the emotion as well.
Dave, Ron here again. I just wanted to ask you, again, in your guidebook, you mentioned that high Ds make up 3% of the population in the U.S. How recent is that statistic? Because I see people like this all over the place, to be honest, in business. So I'm just interested if that figure is current or how do we get to 3%?
It's based on some studies done by TTI. It is updated regularly and hasn't varied a whole lot. But you'll notice, that's a really good point, when you get into business, especially when you go and start talking about measure levels and above, more and more high Ds are rising up there. And so the world you're dealing with is a limited subset, primarily of high Ds. The other categories tend to be more the workers. So if you're doing an executive presentation, by the way, you get a lot of high Ds and a lot of high I's. And actually, one of the things I do when I do group work, even with an executive team, you'll get some semblance of all four. But you'll get an overabundance of D's and I's in an executive group. And one thing I like to do is I like to get them in the four corners, just like the profile shows, and then tell them, by the way, 3% are high D's. I think it's 11% are high I's. take a minute. I mean, it's 17. Anyway, yeah, I'm sorry, 70% are high eyes. It says, and that's the leadership. The followers are the following 80%, and they have no idea how to relate to you. That's kind of an eye-opener.
Hmm. Brilliant.
They don't think the way you do. All your best workers. All right. But let's talk about the high eyes. They're fun to talk about. High eyes. They're upbeat, energetic. They are master communicators. They can keep you enthralled for hours with their stories. They can sell ice to the Eskimos. Like the high Ds, they tend to be natural leaders. But the high eyes energy is contagious and spreads to people around them. They're quick to smile, quick to joke, was looking for a way to have fun with things. They have good people instincts and turn themselves with people who are anxious to make a difference. They have a lot of natural charm and powers of persuasion, so they can be peacemakers at the home or in the office. They like to go out, like to have a good time. They find themselves the center of attention, and they like it. So, talk about, that's the high eye at their best. A little story about Susie. Seems to have found a home in marketing and advertising. She's full of creative ideas, makes good connections with the customers, loves the flexibility of her job, the travel she gets to do. Her work is unstructured, which was fine for her. She works in a team with others, other creative people. They walk around their creative space together, and they bounce ideas off each other. As a manager, there's always paperwork to get done, but she can recharge her batteries by going out after with friends and buying dinner and having a few drinks. What's her challenge? Well, managing the budget is a bit of a problem for her. And cost analysis has to be done. Working with the accounting department has to be done. These have to wait until she's in just the right mood to do these things. And when paperwork interferes with getting things done, the creative juices, she gets depressed. Besides, last night she made 3 new best friends. Know people like that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And they are just a joy to be around. They're bubbly, they're upbeat, they're funny, they're charming. Yeah, a lot of fun. Of course, with a funner, there's always a downside. But that's something they're going to worry about a whole lot. So, like any of the behavioral styles, the high eye has its natural strengths, but also has some natural challenges. So let's discuss for a minute here the high eye at their worst. At their worst, they may come across as unorganized, unfocused, and maybe a little bit shallow. And while their stories are always funny, they always seem to focus on them. And other people play smaller, unimportant roles in their stories. Their work can be haphazard. They don't fall upon things that are assigned to them to get things done. They are optimistic and upbeat to the point where it drives other people crazy. And they'll make unrealistic and unachievable goals. They trust their employees to do the right thing without regard to that person's abilities or skills, so they can over-trust. They are slow to acknowledge their mistakes because they believe in the people around them. Hmm. So here's the story of Frank. Frank's excited about his new job in network planning. He knows he's rubbing the elbows with some of the big executives in all the companies he's going to be working in and meeting them regularly, at least on a monthly basis, through presentations and things. When he came in the office, all these network maps were on the wall. He tore all those things down because they weren't very fun. Replaced them with pictures of himself, getting handshakes from people who are famous. His bosses, top executives of the company, and even the President of the United States. And of course, there's all his awards go on the wall there, too. Now, as far as the map goes, that's what the engineers are for. They could do the map stuff. He's going to focus on the big stuff. He has to go to this boring conference this afternoon. Really not looking forward to it. But then on the other hand, he can spend time getting his Facebook page updated. So what's Frank's challenge? He's going to love making presentations to the executives, but hopes he doesn't get too many technical questions. He only has so many hours at work that his personal time takes over. And corporate will let him fly to his engineers to these meetings. They have to do these things themselves. Well, then he says, you know what? When I get there, I'll just wing it. Sound familiar to you guys again? Nod your heads?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, high eyes have all these strengths, but they can also be perceived very differently or come across very differently if they're not careful. All things that can make them fun and popular can also cause them to be not trusted, to be viewed as shallow and uncaring. You're nothing more than a glad hand. You don't focus on the details. And by the way, you're not in the right job because this job requires a structure that you don't have. Hell, about the high eye as a coach. Well, may not challenge a client to do more? Yeah, because, you know, they're doing the best they can. And I trust them to do the right thing, so if that's all they say they can do, then I'm sure they're telling me the right thing here. They may blend their own personal stories to the coaching session to make a point, if you will. The point may be minuscule compared to the length and breadth of the story, though. Which, by the way, is about them, not about the client. They may spend time chatting with the client rather than coaching them. So they'll start with, hi, how you doing? And it turns into a discussion about cooking chicken versus the challenges that are in front of the client. The questions may get long and involved. Now, they don't go down a rabbit hole in terms of detail. They tend to meander off into the sunset someplace. And no one's quite sure what they're really asking. And if you actually measure time they were talking with the client versus listening, it wouldn't be 20-80, coach 20, client 80. It'd be more like coach 80, client 20. Now, natural tendencies. Like with the D, these things can be adjusted. When you're aware of your behavioral style, aware of your own tendencies, you can say to yourself, aha, make sure I stay on track here and accomplish certain key things with my client. Do high eyes make good coaches? Of course they do. They're phenomenal cheerleaders. And that client needs someone to help them be motivated, help them cheer for them, to make them feel like they're worth something. A high eye is a perfect coach for them. And high eyes are sensitive to the issues about emotions. So they're going to hear emotions maybe more than a client will. And that's very important. because you know, so many of the problems we talk about are really emotional type problems. So if you have a high eye of the client, they're going to be optimistic. They're going to be upbeat, which means they tend to gloss over problems sometimes. So when you're coaching someone, make sure that when you hear the upbeat stuff, you hear what's, you hear the tone of the voice as well, what's underneath that. They'll be open with you. They don't tend to hide things. You ask the right questions, they'll tell you everything. More than you ever wanted to know. They're not going to hide things from you, though. Blind spots, too optimistic. Whether it be in how fast they can repair the relationship, or they're going to get the project finished, or how much money they're going to spend on vacation, or how much weight they're going to lose, they tend to be too optimistic. So as a coach, part of your job is to add realism. So, Harry, I think you can lose 57 pounds in the next 2 weeks, huh? Mighty ambitious of me. What might be a more reasonable number for us to work with over 2 weeks' time? Because, you know, that's like 8 pounds a day. Or they may talk about things they're going to do and then not take action on them. So part of the reason you do as a coach with a high eye, you ask them, can I be your accountability partner? And then when you get on the call with them, you check in and say, you have these things done. You're liable to get a story in response. If we went to sit there and say, Sally, hang on a minute here, Sally. Did you get these things done? Okay, so they didn't get done. How are we going to get them done? All right. Other things about the high eye as a client. They are going to try and avoid conflict. They like people, and they know people like them. So if part of their coaching involves talking about the hard talk with someone else around them, they're not going to like that. They're agreeable, so they may agree to do it. But you've got to make sure they actually do have the conversations. Their stories tend to go off into the weeds. So you ask a question that's nice and open-ended and short. They give a response that starts off down one path and then wanders off someplace else entirely different, and you think to yourself, what's the point here? Then you have to stop and say, whoa, hang on there. The question was this. I think you said this is the answer. Let's confirm this. What does this mean to us? And don't let them wander away. High eyes tend to have a lot of number one priorities. They're all number one priorities. They may not understand how others view them because they are so nice and they're popular. They may be well-liked, but not well-respected. And they have a need to talk, does not have a corresponding need to listen. So you have to focus on helping them listen, not just to you as a coach, but also to those around them. All right. Questions about the high eye? Besides Sandy, any more high eyes on the call here?
Yes.
Yeah, this is David. I'm a high eye.
You're a high eye? Yeah.
Oh, I knew that. This is Sandy. David, you're the guy laughing all the time.
No, I'm actually muted.
You're muted? You're laughing.
Now, that would be Mac laughing all the time.
That was Mac laughing. Are you a high eye, too?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that like Mac had good taste in jokes, I thought.
Oh, that's funny. Do you know, I guess my question is, because it sounds... It's in its purest form, you know, in this description does not describe me. Like, I'm actually a high I, high D. So
okay.
So it describes me, but the flighty nature of it isn't quite accurate. So when you look at the profile, and I'm inspirational as an example, is my profile. That profile describes me much better than the purest form of what a high I is. So So this is what I'm sort of, that interplay of your top two sort of makes more sense to me than just like the high D being all those characteristics, the high I being all these. There's so much more when you take into consideration the other profile components.
So, Sandy, you win the prize. Most people who teach DISC, who work with this with their clients, who do it in workshops, don't truly understand DISC. They focus on the D, the I, the S, and the C. And the reality is we're a combination of all four of those things. And some people are more pure in their style. They're pure D, I, S, or C. But most folks are combinations of two or more of those things together. And we're going to spend a lot of time in this class talking about how their different behavioral styles play together to make you a unique person. And you're not strictly a D, an I, an S, or a C. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is, because I teach a class this way, we do the DISC first because you got to start with the basics. Mm-hmm. But the combinations are so important. And I'll tell you guys, over the years, I made lots of money going into organizations where they'd already had a DISC profile. And the CEO or the person in charge of HR, whoever it was that sponsored this, really believed in DISC, but said, someone came in last year, did DISC for us, and now we're more screwed up than ever. Help us. And it comes down to the issues which are primarily of, they focused on D, I, S, and B, and not the combinations. That's the magical portion that people who learn about DISC thoroughly understand. You're more than one, you're a combination, and those make you unique. So good question there, Sandy.
Thank you.
All right. Questions to ask the high I. I like the way it says, how does this make you feel? I don't like that question. Okay? What could go wrong here? Let's go give them some pause. Because they don't think about things going wrong. What about things going right? Does it matter what others think? Well, that's a really interesting question for a high I, because on the one hand, it really does, because I want to be liked and more popular. On the other hand, it really doesn't, because it doesn't matter what I decide, people like me anyway. But you've got to sit down and say, what are they going to think? How are they going to react? I always like the one that says, how would your mother view that? Okay? When can you, keyword, realistically accomplish this? Yeah, I'll lose 57 pounds in 2 weeks. Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's think about that for a minute here. What's realistic? How will you know if you've been successful? How will you know if it worked? Now, think about what they're going to do without the end result in mind. How will you know if it worked? If you ask those kind of questions, you're going to keep the high I coming back and moving forward. So that's kind of the intro to the high D and the high I. Kind of questions you guys have after reading the material and hearing the discussion here tonight?
Well, I just had one question on the high I. It says they don't understand others' perceptions of them. But on the other hand, their biggest fear of being liked.
Yeah.
So it kind of seems like a paradox.
You want to have some fun sometime? Get a high D and get a high I in a crowd and say, yeah, you know what? No one really likes you. I mean, they're nice to you because you're the boss, but they don't really like you. And you can watch their face just drop. Oh, my God. Oh, wait a minute. You're pulling my leg, aren't you? Woo! I was worried there for a second. So they have a fear of not being liked, and they make decisions based on what they think is make them most popular versus what is right. And they don't view them, and they'll view some of the good things, but if they're viewed somehow as being flighty or inconsistent, they won't see that. Well, that's what I'm referring to when I have those statements in there. Does that help you some?
That's a good one. Yeah, I don't see that at all. That's a blind spot.
Here we go.
Oh, boy.
Other questions or comments?
Dave, Ron here. I'd just like to ask a question about another statement in the guidance book here on a high D, if I may just jump back to that. Right at the end, you've added in a bit here. It says, similarly, a high D does not necessarily hold a grudge about every issue that makes them angry. Now, here's the part that I have a bit of difficulty with. They may clearly separate their anger about an issue or situation, anger at the person behind the situation. But is that really possible?
Yeah, it is, especially for a high D. While other types may hold grudges longer, if you have something about a particular issue, it may annoy me. And by the way, it'll be like a 1 on my annoyance scale, but it may be viewed as a 7 by somebody else on the outside. Boy, you're really pissed about that. Jeez. To me, it was a 1, and I'm done, and I'm moving on. Yeah, I think you're still mad about that. No, the D gets mad and moves on quickly. They don't tend to hold
I'm
on.
Kind of thinking about a situation, for example, if I was entrusted with a task by a high D, and I haven't managed the person underneath me effectively, therefore the task hasn't been carried out quickly enough and effectively enough, how would he or she be able to separate their anger at the situation that the task's not done from the anger that I haven't managed it, you know, correctly in terms of their own perception of it?
Okay, so let's put it to you this way. They may call you in, say, look, you blew this. You're supposed to watch that guy get this thing done. You delegated it. You didn't manage it properly. It costs us money, and I'm really annoyed at what you've done here. So go out and figure out how you're going to fix this problem. All right, they come back to you and say, hey, you want to have lunch? Because they'll get past the anger pretty quickly. And they'll separate the anger of the task versus the person themselves. Now, it's not always true. I mean, you do some things that really screw things up, and they'll hold it longer. But for the most part, they're going to get past it quickly because what they visibly display and what it really means to them may not be the same level at all. So does that help you a little bit?
Yeah, I think I meet you some of the part down the way. There's probably just the experiences I've had. I would agree with your comment that it doesn't work in every instance, because I think some of this results in people getting fired, to be honest with you.
Oh, it does.
I've worked with people who get angry and they don't actually get to the situation behind it. They actually take it out on the person in front of them who was required to get this action completed. So that's just my own personal experience, Dave.
No, but you're right. I mean, let's face reality. An emotionally unintelligent high D with authority may say, you screwed this up, you're fired. Because they're going to be direct, they're going to be to the point, they're going to get things done. Now, 2 years later, you're asking for a job reference, but I'm able to give you one, and a good one. But they're going to act decisively and directly, and especially when they're unaware, they may go too far too quick. But that doesn't mean it's long term, though. Maybe you've heard people who've been said, "Yeah, my boss fired me 7 different times so far," because the boss fired him and then didn't really stick with it. Because it was the emotional response, and they went, "Oh, that's not really stupid. I'm not really going to fire you, but I'm that angry to fire you." So it can happen. You know, don't forget, people are going to be different, and there'll also be a combination of different factors. The D and the C is very different than a D and an I, or a D and an S, or a pure D. But the high D as a driver generally does not hold a grudge. They may get angry, they may react, they may punch you in the face and hand you a washcloth to clean it off.
I like that one. Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Other questions?
So, Dave, it's Sandy. I guess yes. I'm hearing that the EQI and the DISC assessments are good combinations to have as a coach.
Actually, yes.
To assess your coachee.
Yeah. I had both those tools in my toolbox. I use one to lead to the other. If you take Dr. Belson's class, for example, she'll walk you through emotional intelligence, and she'll say right here, here's how I give a DISC profile right here, and she'll talk about that actually in her class.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's really the first step, understanding yourself. You know yourself, know others. Well, the DISC profile helps you understand yourself and really how it relates to others fairly quickly. You can apply to then the idea of managing yourself and managing relationships as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Good. So did you guys enjoy hearing about the D's and the I's?
Yes.
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 Indeed. Thank you.
Yeah, they're the active personality or behavioral type, so they're a lot of fun to get to. We're going to talk about the S's and the C's next Tuesday. And they're equally as important, but they get a lot more laid back. It's a different kind of style. All right, guys.
Great.
Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys all next Tuesday. Bye, Jennifer. All right. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.